Mike DeCourcy, national college basketball writer for the Sporting News. He's in the Basketball Writers Hall of Fame, but he covers a lot of things. But I think we're probably going to talk mostly basketball here because it is that time of the year. And he joins us. First of all, before we can get on with the proceedings here, which regional, if you are headed to one, are you headed?
I am going to Omaha.
Oh, that seems like a good one.
I had planned on that a while ago, probably January, partly because of logistics. And California is always kind of out because you either fly a red eye home or you blow the whole Sunday
right. In
a plane while all the good stuff's happening. So I never go there. And so then it's the other three. Well, Sean Devaney, our outstanding NBA writer, lives fairly close to Boston, so he'll be there.
Right.
And then it was between Atlanta and Omaha. And, you know, I've never been to Nebraska, so I thought, what the heck?
There you go. We talked to Jeff Capel yesterday. He has never been to Omaha, but as a coach at Oklahoma, he had been to Lincoln. So they're looking forward to getting to Omaha. All right, let's get right to it. We're going to give you some hot takes, and we just want a Hall of Fame reaction from you, Mike DeCourcy. We'll start with this one. Virginia's loss to UMBC proves, first 16 beating a 1, proves their style doesn't play on Broadway.
Okay, then why were they in the Elite Eight and 8 minutes away from the Final Four in 2016 with not their best team?
I don't know the answer to that.
that's what I would say to anyone who says that their style doesn't work in the tournament or whatever. The reality is their style put them up, whatever it was, 8, 10, 12, however many it was, when Syracuse put on a press, and then the players let them down. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't react to being pressed. They didn't react to the pressure of the tournament, or trying to get to the Final Four, and they lost. But it had nothing to do with their style. Their style put them in that position, both from the standpoint of regular season performance and the seed that earned them, and then the first three rounds. And then they were there, up with a chance to close it out, and they didn't close.
It's almost like the NCAA tournament's hard to win or something.
You know, that's the thing, Joe. I mean, when we went through the entire regular season with this narrative of, oh, see, one of them can't win with those guys.
Yeah.
Can't win. You got to have veterans. And then what happened? Cincinnati, 22 points up with veterans at every position. Mm-hmm. And they didn't handle it.
Right.
I mean, they didn't handle the end. So wait a second. I thought that Virginia, veterans at a lot of positions. I mean, it's not their oldest team ever, but they weren't playing freshmen, and they didn't handle the pressure of struggling in that game. They weren't able to use their superior physical ability to come back, in part because the pressure of the tournament got to them. And that happens to freshmen, mm-hmm. and it happens to seniors. It happens to everybody, just as fast teams like Carolina, let's say,
right,
didn't win. And a slow team like Virginia didn't win.
Or sometimes a slow team like Syracuse can win three games in 5 days, right?
Yeah, you know, that was the Syracuse, I mean, when Jimmy got the bracket, he must have just like been doing, you know, I'm not 72 yet, I'll get there soon. but he must have been doing jumping jacks when he saw that he had Michigan State in the second round.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had watched Michigan State all year like I had, I mean, I knew they were doomed. I just thought it would be the next round zone, the Duke zone that would get
really?
Them. Oh, yeah.
I should have consulted. I picked them to win it all.
Yeah, that was the fastest thing I did on the bracket. Okay, no more Spartans after Sweet 16. There
really?
Was no way. I mean, they played Duke in November. They were very poor against the zone. I put some of it down to it's only November. No one knew Duke was going to play zone, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
But they really looked bad. And then they played against Northwestern. Northwestern had a zone, and again, there was no progress. I mean, they really struggled again. And what happened in that game was that two of Northwestern's front court players, and they only had two, both got in foul trouble. And so Michigan State was able to come back. But they were very poor. And so as soon as I saw that matchup, I thought they were definitely going down against Duke. And I knew that they would struggle against Syracuse. I thought they would get through it. I mean, if they make one more shot, they're still here.
Right.
But I never believed that they would be able to overcome that matchup.
All right, one more hot take here. The baseball model should be adopted by the NCAA for basketball instead of the one and done.
I couldn't hate the baseball model more. I can't imagine that there's anything sports-wise that I could hate more than that. It is the most ridiculous system that there is in all of sports. I mean, you're telling an 18-year-old, here it is. You have to make an irretrievable decision. You can't get this one wrong. If you get it wrong, it's over. I mean, if it's wrong, tough. And why do we, and what I mean by that is like, okay, let's just say you're a high school student in Raleigh, and you can go to Duke or Carolina, let's say.
Right.
And you choose to go to Duke. And then you get there, and it's just not the place for you. It's wrong. So you can change your mind. You can say, hey, Carolina, would you have me? And most of the time, if you're a good enough student to get into Duke, Carolina still wants you. I mean, my nephew went to Wake and wasn't happy there and then ended up transferring to Carolina and had a wonderful career after that. You can change that. It's not irretrievable. But when you tell an 18-year-old you're a pro or you're an amateur and it's over for if you pick the pros, it's over forever in college. And if you pick college, then you're stuck for 3 years.
Right.
And even if you don't like it, it doesn't work. Why would we force young people into these decisions that are irretrievable to benefit whom? To benefit what, the college?
Well, in that case, it benefits the baseball rule. Mm-hmm. It benefits Major League Baseball because the whole reason they instituted it was so they wouldn't be continuously bidding against themselves each year in the draft. The only thing I would say to that encountering, and I don't like the baseball rule either, is that your option if you go to a four-year school is you could always transfer to a junior college because they do play high-level baseball at junior colleges, and then you would be free to leave right away if you wanted. But I'd certainly understand the larger point.
But there's no real equivalent for that in basketball. I mean, I don't think that – I don't think that is a tenable thing to put. And again, like you said, and it's exactly right, it benefits Major League Baseball. Well, you know what? Major League Baseball is doing fine.
It is.
They're doing great. They don't have to torture young people with a decision like that. And the NBA is doing unbelievably well. College basketball is doing fabulously. Why does everybody have a problem with this? What is wrong with, what is wrong with the current system that has turned NBA into multi-billion-dollar organizations from multi-million-dollar organizations? From the college level is as popular now as it's ever been. What has any of that, the 10 years, 12 years of one and done, what damage has it done to anybody?
Well, I don't think it's done damage to anybody. I just think that people need essentially a boogeyman for what they perceive to be societal ills. And they have decided that the one-and-done ruins it. Clearly, the one-and-done is no good for the NCAA tournament because we have no one-and-done we have one-and-done players left. I'm sorry, I got that one wrong. Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News is joining us here on the Allen Kelly and Company Train Hotline. I kind of want to backtrack a little bit and give you this one. Tom Izzo is more overrated than Sean Miller.
They're both terrific. I mean, one's in the Hall of Fame and one, still is got a shot at it.
One could be the next coach at Pitt.
Obviously Sean's in a difficult circumstance right now with what happened with his assistant coach in September and what's gone on through the course of his regular season. It's not been an easy year for him. How much of that is his own doing, it's, hard to say. Impossible to say because we don't have access to any of the information other than what was laid out against his assistant coach. So, I think I wouldn't say that either of them is overrated. I'd say in some ways Miller is underrated because people keep focusing on the absence of the Final Four appearance and not on the fact he's been in the Elite Eight, I think, four times now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Won multiple conference championships in two different leagues. People act like these things are easy to do. He's a terrific coach. What his next move will be, I think I know that he would like to get a chance to get a fresh start at Pitt. But I don't know for certain whether or not that'll be the move that they make.
He'd get eaten alive in the ACC at Pitt.
Sean Miller would be good for Pitt.
I'm not saying he's not a good coach.
It would
coach.
Be awesome for Pitt
I'm
to have Sean Miller.
I'm just saying that's tough, man. I mean, hell, State gets all the grief in the world for being in a tough neighborhood. Try recruiting at Pitt in this ACC.
It is a challenge. There's no question about that, Joe. You're 100% right. That's what I talked about back the day that they made the decision to go to the ACC.
Yeah.
I said, you guys are in trouble now. I mean, right. this is not easy. And they have to figure that out. But the great thing about the Pitt job right now is that
it's a blank canvas.
Kevin O'Neill. Kevin Stallings crashed this car so badly.
Oh, yeah.
That if you can just get to start, you're a miracle worker.
Right. You might get, if you have the right insurance, you could get a new, get a whole car. You can get your whole car back.
Maybe we shouldn't be dealing in automobile metaphors in this circumstance, but
probably a good
idea. Stick with
Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News is joining us. The Big Ten was hurt by having their conference tournament in November.
No, I don't think so. I told you that the Michigan State thing was strictly stylistic. Purdue, bad luck with the elbow. Ohio State played great relative to what they had. I mean, Gonzaga's outstanding.
Yep.
And they were right there with Gonzaga. And then Michigan, it didn't play well, but I think that was a style thing. I think Houston's a really tough team to play against, very good defensively. They matched up well with what Michigan does. And Michigan's fortunate to be alive, but we'll see what happens. It wouldn't surprise me at all if both of them went down on the Sweet 16. I think Purdue's really going to have trouble without Haas against a very good opponent. I don't know what A&M's going to do, whether they're going to decide that they like being this team again or whether they're just going to go back to being the fractured mess that they were for most of the season. But if they play like they did against Carolina, they could win the whole thing.
No question, man. Talent, at this this time of the year, sometimes talent is the single most important thing in this tournament. We'll close on this. Duke is the team to beat.
Well, I mean, I think Duke is the team to fear. I think Villanova is still the team to beat because they've had a more complete season. They have a better handle on who they are. But Duke is the team to fear. I mean, you guys, we've talked before about Trevon Duval and
Duval.
Duval.
Oh my gosh! What am I going to do with you two guys?
Just want to make sure. I don't want to get a correction email. It's Duval.
I was in Pittsburgh, so I didn't hear how it was said on television.
Yeah.
So, but whatever his name is, he has introduced himself to his teammates and seems to be very much on the same page with them. At least he was in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
He was outstanding. And I was paying very close attention to how, not so much what he did on the court, but how he did it. And he was right there. And so that's where the fear comes in, because if he plays that way through four more games, it becomes extremely difficult to defeat a team with that level of ability.
Right. We talked about with Lauren Brownlow in studio before the whole tournament started. To me, even though he's not nearly their best player, if he plays well, I don't see Duke losing because he makes their offense unstoppable when he plays well.
Yeah, but even more so than playing well. I mean, I don't really even care that much if he comes out and goes 3-for-12 or whatever. It's about how he plays. Is he part of those other four guys?
Right.
Are they connected to him? Obviously, if he plays, if he goes 7-for-12, I mean, then it's really hard. But just the engagement and the cooperation with the other four, when that's at a high level, then they become such a great offensive team. And then defensively, I got some people yelling because their KenPom ranking is high for saying they're not elite defensively. I'm not buying. I'm not saying that they can't play elite defense. But we saw what Carolina did to them in the ACC tournament. I mean, so it's there to be had. I will say, Wendell Carter right now, at the center of the 2-3 zone,
mm-hmm.
is as good in that spot.
Yep.
Right now for a freshman as any player I've ever seen.
No question about it.
He is just staggeringly good in that spot. Now, I mean, he won't play a second or third year like some of Syracuse's guys have over the years, but you know, he is absolutely massive in that spot.
Yeah, he's tremendous by the rim. And after we talked to Jeff Capel about it yesterday, one of the best parts about the 2-3 zone is that it keeps Wendell Carter Jr. right near the basket. And he is dynamite right around there. It's, to an extent, it keeps him out of foul trouble, although he has managed to get in foul trouble anyway, but it keeps him closer to the goal. Mike DeCourcy, follow him on Twitter, at TSN Mike. And we will see you in San Antonio, sir. It's my favorite Final Four city. That and Indianapolis, kind of a toss-up, but I love San Antonio.
Can't wait, fellas. I'll look forward to seeing you down there.